Parshas Vayeshev. Obviously, the most dramatic story in Parshas Vayeshev is that of Mechiras Yosef. And in Perek Lamed Zayin, we have a whole series of psukim that describe the interaction between Reuven. That's what we want to focus on, between Reuven and the brothers. When the brothers see Yosef approaching from a distance, they plan to kill him by throwing him into one of the boros. Chazal say that this bar was full of akravim, nechoshim. It was very, very, very dangerous. And Vayishma Reuven Vayatzileu Miyodom, Reuven said that Al Tishpchudam, don't spill his blood. Hashlicho so El Habor Hazeh. Now, the brothers apparently didn't realize that Reuven had a plan over here. He was hoping to come back and Laman Hatzilo so Miyodom, Lashiva El Aviv. So Reuven felt that sense of responsibility to return and his brother Yosef to his father Jacob, but they weren't aware of that. They thought that he was also collaborating with them. And the Torah goes on to say that when Yosef actually approached them, they stripped him of his ksones pasim and they threw him into a bar, v'habar reik, ein bo mayim. Famous Rashi, we all know the Rashi. Let's just read it inside. Mimashba shenemar v'habar reik, ein yodea she'ein bo mayim. There seems to be some superfluous extra words in the pasuk. The pasuk had to go out of its way to say reik and ein bo mayim. So usually when there are extra words, it's coming to be mamayit something. This, but not something else. Matamid lomar ein bo mayim, mayim ein bo avol nechoshim vakravim yeshbo. So just a comment on the side before we get to our main topic for today. The brothers believed that Reuven was in on the plan, and he was very much on board with their decision.
Yes.
In fact,
he took a leadership role.
Right, but his role really, what they didn't realize that his role and his goal was to save Yosef, but they didn't realize that. They thought he was totally, totally with them on board. And therefore, it says later on that when Yosef was sold to Mitzrayim, he was sold for Esrim Kesef. And Chazal say that the brothers took the Esrim Kesef and they bought shoes.
Shoes,
not lion.
If we say that, how does that then come into what we were saying last week, that we don't know whether they sold him or not?
Right, that's against the Rashbam. The Rashbam holds that they had nothing to do with selling him. But according to all the other Mepharshim, with the exception of the Rashbam, that they, the brothers, sold him. So the Piyut speaks about how they sold him for pairs of shoes.
That's from a pasuk in Novi.
Yeah, yeah. And the question is, why? So why are they buying shoes? You know, like, do they need pairs of shoes? And not only that, the way Chazal calculate the amount of money they spend for each pair of shoes, it comes out that they bought a pair of shoes even for Reuven. Reuven wasn't even around at that time, but they thought he was, you know, he was a collaborator, he was in on the deal. So they thought he would want to wear shoes as well. So they bought shoes. Now, I don't know if there was a shoe sale or what, you know. When I taught in Canada, I had one of my friends there, his name is Shimmy. He used to come to the shiurim when he could on Shabbos. He owned a shoe store, so he still owns a shoe store. I think it's on Bathurst Street. So I always said to myself, you know, if Shimmy was there, he would have made a killing that day. They bought so many pairs of shoes. So I saw something interesting in the Maznaim LaTorah. Maybe we'll try to integrate it here into today's theme. Why were they buying shoes? So there's a whole debate about the selling of Yosef on the part of the brothers. Were they justified in any sense? You know, why? You know, we're talking about Shiftei Kah. It's not so simple to say that they took their brother and they. So Chazal say, again, this is very, has to be understood and needs a lot of work. I'm just mentioning it in passing. that there was actually a judgment. They convened a Beis Din. You remember, of course, that at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Yosef brings to his father Dibasam Ra. And they judged Yosef in a Beis Din. The question is, how exactly did they have enough for a Beis Din? It seems that even the Shechina was in on it. Very complicated business. As a Moreid and as a Rodef. Meaning that the possibility existed that ultimately Yaakov would be so impressed by the words of Yosef against the brothers, thinking that the brothers had gone off, today we use the phrase, gone off the derech, that Yaakov might have put a whammy on the brothers, a klola. The klola of Yaakov had a tremendous amount of power, and they were afraid they would be completely destroyed and the entire household of Yaakov would end up with just one brother, and that would be Yosef. And they thought, and they had evidence to that effect, that that was Yosef's plan. That he would inherit, and they would be completely knocked off and pushed off the globe. So they judged him as a rodent, and therefore they put him to death. Now the question is obvious. If they really did have, according to that opinion, they had this judgment, and Beis Din handed down a verdict that this man is a rodent and he has to be put to death, then why do we find throughout the entire Torah, especially in Torah Shebaal Peh, the guilt of the brothers for selling Yosef? Why are they considered guilty? In their own eyes, they thought they were guiltless. They sat down to eat bread after they sold Yosef. But yet, throughout Chazal, we'll say it in the Asorah Aruge Malchus. You remember the Eila Ezkara that we recite? We recite it in different forms on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur. And basically, the piyut indicates that the Asara Haruge Malchus were a replacement, so to speak, a kapara, as we call it, for the Asara brothers, the ten brothers, because Binyamin wasn't there, who sold Yosef. So we see that there's a tremendous amount of guilt. There's one day in the Gemara Nedarim that the Jewish people were sent down to Mitzrayim for what was meant to be 400 years of slavery because of Mechiras Yosef. So how do we reconcile these two elements? That on the one hand, they felt justified. They had a psak Beis Din. They had a verdict from the Beis Din that Yosef had to be put to death. He was a rodev. And on the other hand, all the guilt and the punishment and the need for kapara over the course of the entire Jewish history because of Mechiras Yosef. So I saw in a sefer called Maznayim LeTorah. You heard of it? It's Rav Sorotskin. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Telz, and he has some brilliant insights into Chumash. You have to appreciate his style. His style is based on what we call halachic lundus. You know, he's a Rosh Yeshiva, so he doesn't interpret the psukim the way Tom the Rashbam would have interpreted the psukim. It's a whole other approach. And he says the following: two major chidushim. His first chiddush is the Mishnah establishes in Masechta Sanhedrin that Haruge Beis Din, which means anyone who's condemned to death by a Jewish court and he was put to death, they implemented the death penalty, the capital crime, is ein misablimal. There's no avelus. In other words, we normally have avelus even for a Rasha Nebuchadnezzar who dies. But the only exception to that rule, when we suspend and we negate the laws of Avelus, is Haruge Beis Din, when Beis Din puts someone to death. The brothers were so absolutely convinced that they were in the right, because they had a Psak Beis Din, and as a result, Yosef's status would be that of Haruge Beis Din. Again, you have to add that they believed that Yosef would be killed on his way to Mitzrayim, because there's no way that Mitzrayim would tolerate an Ivri, you know that. So they went ahead and they bought shoes, and they wore new shoes, because the law of an Avel is that an Avel is not allowed to wear shoes. They wanted to demonstrate that there's no Avelus here for Yosef, because they were in the right, so they bought new shoes. But that's only half of what his chiddush is. The second half of his chiddush is, well, okay, the brothers thought they were justified, but history doesn't bear that out. In fact, by the way, he points out that later on in Parshas Vayigash, it says, "Aval Hashemim Anachnu," And there they seem to be saying vidui for a whole different sin, that they saw Yosef begging and they were cruel. It doesn't say anything about the fact that they did tshuva on the actual sale of Yosef. Because again, when she tells them, they thought they would justify the head of Psak Bezdin. So why all the guilt? The whole of Jewish history because of this Mechiras Yosef. So he says the following chiddush. Very brilliant insight. Again, you have to understand this is a Rosh Hashiva with what we call a love the shikup, you know, halachic thinking. And he says the following. There's a halacha that a sone, I'll explain, is pasul adun. In other words, a judge who harbors enmity against the accused is completely disqualified to sit in judgment. So the chidah, you heard of the chidah? He lived about two and a half centuries ago. So he asks the following kasha. First he tells a story. It's an interesting story. He has a story in which he had a din Torah with somebody. We'll call him Plony. And Plony admitted in front of the court that he owed 50% of the claim, of Rav David Azulai's claim against him. So what did that person therefore have to do?
Shvuah.
Had to take a shvuah, that's called modern mitzvah. And he went ahead and he took the shvuah. And the chidah knew that he had perjured himself in that shvuah. That's story number one. Then the chidah tells the following. There was a judgment that came in front of him. He was the dayan. This is no longer Plony, this is Almoni, another individual. And that Almoni was known to be a Rasha. He had violated many different prohibitions, including some of the big ones, publicly. So the Chidah judged him. And afterwards, the Chidah asked the following kasha in his public works. The Chidah wrote prolifically, many, many different works. In one of his writings, he says, how was I able, he asks himself a kasha, how is a judge able to sit in judgment over a Rasha? The halacha is that there's a mitzvah to hate Rishoyim. Pasuk says that Kodesh Baruch Hu hates Rishoyim, we have to imitate God, we also sin as Rishoyim. Sin as Rishoyim is a mitzvah. So he asks the following question. This guy, and many other cases, they came up to many different Batei Dinim throughout Jewish history. He's a Rasha, he's a known Rasha. And the halacha is that we have to hate him. How then can we judge him? The Mishnah says that a sone is posel adun. So the Chidah gives the following answer. He says that sinner is not the sinner that the Mishnah has in mind. The Mishnah feels that if you harbor a certain enmity towards a person, you will not be able to function as a judge, the melamed olav schutz, to find some sort of a mitigating consideration. However, here, why do you hate this person? Because he is going against God, he's rebelling against God. Your hatred is a hatred of him that's a kiyum a mitzvah because of sinas harishayim.
Because of religious reasons.
And that kind of sinner is not included in the sinner of the Mishnah. So therefore every judge, when he gets a case, and he may even know who the Rasha is or whatever, or it's a known fact for other sins, not for the sin that he's judging on, but it's a known fact that he's a Rasha, and the psul of Sone is not chal, any judge can judge it. Then the Chidah asks himself, so why didn't I judge this guy, that's Plony, the first case that I gave you, who took a Shvuah Sheker? Okay, he took a Shvuah Sheker, he's a Rasha, and the din is that you have to hate him. Says the Chidah, when do I say that Sinas HaRashayim does not disqualify the judge? That's when the sinner has nothing to do with the judge himself. It has to do with an Avera, the guy was Machal Shabbos, whatever he did, Chas V'Shalom. But if the sinner is because he did a wrong to you personally, that sinner already is a personal sinner that affects and impacts the heart and makes it impossible for the judge to be absolutely objective, and therefore I completely excluded myself from judgment. So in the case of the Achei Yosef, applying it back to our question, they thought that their hatred for Yosef was built and predicated on Sinas HaRishayim. After all, he was guilty of Lashon Hara, and Yosef was accusing them of crimes, and they were guiltless, and so forth and so on. We are still Kashal Adun. But they missed the punchline of the Chidah. That if the hatred is because he did you wrong, and you're harboring a personal hatred, that already goes way beyond sin as a rishon. That's a personal sinner. And then we apply the principle of the Mishnah that a dayan is pasul adu. I got off a little bit on a tangent here, but anyway, that's how the Rosh Hashiva wants to justify why the guilt of the Achim. They thought that they were kosher ladun, and their judgment was fair and valid. He had the halacha, the status of Haruge Bezdin. They went out and they bought shoes, but no, they were wrong. Their din was not.
Then they must have realized in the end that they shouldn't have done it, and that's why they became.
Well, they did tshuva, but you know what, Doc? This is another shear for himself. The tshuva was not a real full-fledged tshuva. They never actually admitted guilt on the crime itself. You know, they should have had a way of, even after the judgment was, and the final verdict was delivered, they could have found a way of punishing Yosef without having to kill him. And they were totally cruel. They didn't feel anything, even bischanan olifanenu, even when he was crying and supplicating in front. Okay. Getting back to us, what's our topic for today? Of course, after they took the Ksonis Pasim, they dipped it in the blood of an animal, they brought it back to Yaakov, and Yaakov recognized the Tarov Taraf Yosef. So here we have an Alshich. Now, just a few words of the Alshich, or Moshe Alshich. He also was a prolific writer, but what we have to know about him is that he was also a philosopher. He was a thinker. And a lot of his thought deals with what we call the mystical part of Torah. He is very much influenced in his writings here in Parshas Vayeshev, but elsewhere, as we'll soon see in Tanakh. He wrote a tremendous commentary on Sefer Daniel. It's almost impossible to learn Sefer Daniel just to get through the Aramaic. But again, we have art school, so that helps. But he wrote a commentary that gives you a deeper insight into what's going on in Sefer Daniel, as we'll soon see. The Alshich was very much influenced by the Zohar. He always calls it Sefer HaZohar, or HaZohar HaKadosh. And in this case, in his commentary on the Parsha of Mechiras Yosef, he invokes a statement in the Zohar. The Zohar you'll see here is printed number 4 on your pages. We're not going to go through the entire Zohar because we would need to have a very good translation of the Zohar. But the Zohar makes a very fundamental philosophical point. We saw in Rashi, in the name of Chazal, that they threw Yosef into a bar. The bar was empty, but what did it have inside? Nechashim v'akrav. Says the Zohar, you know what? Nechashim v'akravim is not the end of the world. My high. I mean, what are the chances of surviving nechashim v'akravim? I have a story to tell you. My first dwelling in Eretz Yisrael was in a place called Maaleh Adumim. Not the Maaleh Adumim of today. I'm talking the Maaleh Adumim of the Eser Makis, as I call it. Because every day, you know, there was another phenomenon. Anyway, Bekitzar Maisa, my wife was in the 8th month pregnancy. She got bitten by a scorpion. Okay, we rushed her to the hospital. Again, on that day, there was a pigua. The Arabs, our great cousins, you know, our very friendly cousins, were lined up. Because to get from Aleh Adumim in that time to Hadassah in Har Tzofim, you had to go through Abu Dis. And again, if you know the history of Abu Dis, they're not our great friends. They were lined up on the sides of the road thinking that they were rushing my wife to the hospital in the ambulance because she had been hit in that pigua, and they were clapping. The whole Arab town was out there clapping that another patsua was being taken to. So I have deep memories of this. Anyway, my wife was being taken not because Chashom she was hit in the pigua, but because she was bitten by a scorpion. Thank God the bite was not dangerous, and she's okay. My son, who was born at Azrael, he's a little bit jumpy, so I don't know. It might be because of that scorpion. I don't know. I never figured it out. But anyway, so the Zohar wants to say the following, that a scorpion is not the end of the world. And that's why Reuven thought that despite the fact that he encouraged them to throw Yosef into the bar, he would be able to pull Yosef out of the bar. why is the scorpion not, you know, not so dangerous? And he says, the Zohar, that if you compare it to the alternative, that the brothers were about to kill him, and you'll see the language, he says, Lego guva denokshin vakrav, this is the last 2.5 lines, lo yitmaser biyode, he wouldn't be given over to the hands of sonui, of the sonim, meaning the brothers were out to kill Yosef. And the sonim lo merachmele, they're not going to have any compassion. In other words, if Reuven has decided he wants to kill Shimon, and that's his sinner, he wants to let it out, it's going to happen. There's very little chance, if any, for salvation. But not in the case of Nechoshim Vakravim. That's different than a human sone. And the Alshich embellishes this Zohar. Yitochen, he says to find this on the bottom right, number 5. Shechoshash Reuven penyasekein v'yuchal. He thought that maybe he would be able to save Yosef if Yosef was thrown into the bar. Why? He says the following. Ki hu bal bechira v'al kein hikdim v'omar v'yad al tishlechu bo. If you look back in the pasuk, which you'll see on the top of your page, the main words here is v'yad, pasuk chav beis, v'yad al tishlechu bo. You see the word yad?
Yeah.
So what is the word yad? Yad means the hands of a baal bechira. A human being has freedom of choice. That is the endowment that makes a human being unique in the kingdom of Balei Chayim. He says the following: Tov la nicho bibchiras nechoshim Balei Chayim nibchiras bnei adam. It's a lot less dangerous to leave a human being into the hands of the choice of an animal, of a creature, as opposed to the choice of a human being. Why? Because, as the Zohar points out, in the case of Nechoshim and Balei Chayim, there's a possibility of Siyata Dishmaya. Kol Cheftza, what was Reuven's plan? Leman Hatzil Oso Miyodom. Again, emphasize the word Miyodom. Klomar, Miyodom. What does miyada mean? Balei bechira, that they have freedom of choice. V'lo yibotzer mehem, nothing is going to inhibit them. Kol asher yazmu lasus, whatever they planned and schemed, a baal bechira is given freedom of choice. Even if it's a terrible action of murder, he has the possibility of murder. Masha ein kein v'yos balei chayim, and here he quotes a pasuk back in Sefer Bereishis, ki morav chitisaso tipo aleihem. That the fear of man is in the hearts of the animal. Ki tzadik v'yosharu, and Yosef is a tzadik. V'tzelem Elokim shalim b'fanav, he is a full image of God. V'lo yeiro v'lo yashchisu oso. He relied on the fact that God would not allow the animals to exercise their limited kind of freedom of choice and put a tzaddik to death. Achosh, well, he's afraid of pen acher sheyashlich oso, pen migavoy yigamu ba'oven. He says that he was afraid that even after they would throw him down into the pit, they would still find a way of killing him by hand. V'yad al tishlichu bo, meaning that they would throw a stone down and crush. No, he's asking the following question: why does the Zohar assume that they would, that Reuven was afraid that they would crush Yosef to death by throwing a stone on him? After all, they threw him into a bar, and there were nechashim and akravim in the bar. The answer is that they couldn't rely on. They couldn't rely on nechashim and akravim because Yosef has a tzelem Elokim, and the animals are afraid of man when he's endowed with that special protection from above. But once man, in his evil, gets a hold of someone else and decides at all costs he's going to kill him, there's no way of preventing of that happening.
But in their thinking, he didn't have a tzelem Elokim.
Again, you know, as usual, Tom, you're always trying to, you know, catch me on the thing. But again, there are different approaches to how to understand this. But they weren't aware of the fact that that he would survive, Lechora, right? But they wanted to guarantee that he would die. And that's why Reuven wanted to make sure that they wouldn't throw a stone on him. Now again, Rabbi Osa, the Alshich lived about 3 centuries ago. Let's turn the clock back 5 centuries ago, 2 centuries earlier to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. Anybody remember where he lived? In Tzfat. 5 centuries ago, he's a contemporary of Maran HaBeit Yosef. And he writes the following. V'yatzileu miyodom. What was Reuven's plan to save Yosef? Pirush. L'fisha ha'odom baal b'chira v'rotzon. Man is endowed with freedom of choice and will. V'yachol larog. Please underline, these are some of the most famous words in the history of Jewish philosophy. And for some, the most notorious words in the history of Jewish philosophy. Meaning, these next 4 words are going to kick up a tremendous amount of opposition. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says something here which is going to be very controversial. And I'm not understating it. Mi shelo nischayev misa. Freedom of choice guarantees my ability to kill someone who's absolutely guiltless. You know, you're asking a philosophical question. Can a person who is guiltless, who's innocent, be killed? And now you have a problem. Because on the one hand, we believe that God is the God of justice. And how could an innocent person die? But on the other hand, God is the God of investing, or shall we say, bestowing freedom of choice upon the human being. How do you juggle the two? Does Reuven have freedom of choice to kill Shimon even if Shimon is innocent? And the Aruch Chaim's answer is yes, because there's no limitation to freedom of choice. Afil l'mishalo nischayev misa. Masha einken chayes roos. The animals, lo yifku bi adam im lo shi ischayev misa b'shamayim. An animal only has the ability, he's given the freedom by God, to kill a human being if that human being deserves to die. The Therefore Reuven decides, I'm going to save Yosef. How am I going to save Yosef? Throw him into the bar. The Akravim, the Nechash, will not have the power to kill him because he doesn't deserve to die, B'nei Shamayim. But miyadam, save him from the hands of man, pirish miday bal bechira. Ubazes sasar omram v'nira mayu chalomosav ki abechira tevatel hadavar v'ein raya im yahrguhu ki sheker diber. In other words, they were boasting about the fact that, okay, we're going to kill him, and let's see what happens with his dreams. And that's really not a fair argument, because they have freedom of choice to kill him. And it's not that his dreams are meaningless. You know, the fact that he, Yosef, would be put to death and he'll die at their hands would not in any way disprove the chalomos. Because even with the chalomos, they still have freedom of choice. And that which Yosef dreamed and that which he told him is not sheker. It's not fabrication. It's truth. But nevertheless, he could die, because a free man, an innocent man, could die at the hands of man. And again, I'm always worried about, getting to the punchline, so I'm going to fast forward for just a moment before I see how the Alshich is very consistent to the Mor Nevuchim on page 2. Again, we're going to come back to where we're up to. Please keep your finger on the place, because we're up to Noach, which is number 7, but I just want to show you what the Rambam has to say in the Mor Nevuchim. And he says that one of the fundamentals of our Torah, and anyone who follows Moshe Rabbeinu, is that man has power, he has freedom of choice, and that's the way God created the nature of man, and he can do whatever he wants. However, the Rambam says that there is a limit to man's freedom of choice. He says, Kol minei balei chayim, also the animals have a chefetz, they have a certain element of will, but anyone who dies, it's because of Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's because of the absolute will of the Almighty. Because it's impossible, he says, to violate the Yesod of Torah, of our Amun, of our faith. And our faith is that, and if you fast forward a little bit, I don't know if it came out bolded, I tried to bold it. Kol haba al b'nei Adam, anything that befalls man, min ha'yisurim, never any sort of suffering and sorrows, even if you bang your toenail, you bite your tongue or something, mashem agilahem, is Ha'adam Hayachid Atzibur Hakol Mipnei Shehem Ruuyim Lekach B'Mishpat Hatzedek Asher Ein Ovel Bo Klal. So the Rambam says, yes, there's freedom of choice, but at the same time, there is no violation of justice. And anyone who is suffering or is kashrom dies, it's all because of a divine plan. And at the end of this whole presentation, he quotes the pasuk, Kikol drachav mikel emunah ve'enova kikol drachav mishpat. You'll ask me, why is so-and-so roi? Why is he suitable? Why is he... not suitable, what's the word I'm looking for? Why is he deserving of such punishment? He's an absolute tzaddik. I can't answer that question, says the Rambam. The Rambam says, Ein anu yodin. You know, those are the divine secrets. We don't know. You know, the Kabbalists believe in Gilgal Neshamas. Whatever your answer is, why good people suffer. But the Rambam says, it's kol drachav mishpat, it's part of tzedek, and we have to believe that anything that happens. So therefore, there's no way that you can say that man has freedom of choice to kill someone who's absolutely innocent and doesn't deserve to die. That can't be. All of Yisurim, anything that happens to a person is part of a divine plan. And again, the literature here against the Archaim is long and complicated. Some try to backtrack and reconcile, you know, the Rishonim with the Archaim HaKadosh and say, you know, maybe the Archaim didn't mean it exactly. Maybe what he meant is that you can kill someone who's guiltless, but it's all part of a divine plan, you know, somehow. But Pashtus, straightforward in explaining Reuven's scheme and his plan, it's quite clear, Shalom Ischayev Misa, that the brothers, if he was given over to the hands of the brothers, could kill him, even if he was innocent. But in that same situation of Yosef, the Balei Chaim would not be able to kill Yosef, because he's innocent. Balei Chaim can't take the life of someone who's innocent. Now, if you take a look at this Aruch Chaim and put it together with the Alshich, and the Aruch Chaim was hundreds of years before the Alshich, at least a century, if not two centuries before the Alshich, you see that the Alshich, without knowing it, is standing on the shoulders of greats who came before him. And it doesn't surprise me that Tzvi Aruch Chaim came up with this thesis, because he was also very influenced by the Zohar. And take a look in Parshas Noach. It says over there, Vakimosi as brisi itoch, ubasal atevato uvanech mishtcho neshevanech itoch. And Rashi says the following, what does it mean, brisi itoch? Bris hayitzorech ala peros, shelo yirokvu v'yapshu, v'shelo yaharguhu reshoim shebedor. It's unbelievable. God had to supply through a covenant an absolute protection for Noach. He's going to be building the Teva for 120 years and the Rishayim are going to try to kill him. Hashem says, it's a bris. I commit myself to protect you. Because even though you're innocent, the Rishayim could put you to death without a divine intervention. And they once asked the Briska Rav, which you'll see in number 9, he says, Alzeh Sha'olav ka'eis lishos b'tzavta im chayos roz tofos u'musukonos. He asks the following question. Noach went into the Teva with some very dangerous animals.
Lions.
Lions, oh boy. That scares me right there. I don't know. He went into the lion's den. That's why I want to learn with you a little bit of Sefer Daniel. Who else went into the lion's den? Daniel. But you don't know about Daniel's friends. Well, that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
He had three very good friends, and the last one I love a lot. His name was Azariah. Okay, anyway. So he says, Al Shmir Sakon Zulo Yetzar Bris. Why was the Bris only against the Rishayim? And that the fruits would grow and so forth and so on. What about the animals? Didn't Hashem need to calm down Noach about the animals? These are vicious animals. You know, what do they call them in South Africa? The Big Five or something like that?
Yes, the Big Five.
The Big Five. I mean, they say the worst of the five, I don't know if this is true, is the hippopotamus. If a hippopotamus gets a hold of you, forget it. Worse than a lion. That's what I was told. I don't know if it's true. Anyway, I don't mess around with the Big Five. Even though I have a friend here in the community who's really encouraged me to go to a big park. I mean, a park that's larger than the state of Israel in South Africa. It's called Kruger. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Yeah.
Have you been?
Yeah. No.
Jeremy, you were there? You saw the Big Five?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Wow. I'm afraid to go. I don't know. I need a special bris. But Noach didn't need a bris. Why? Says the Briska Rav, there was no need for a bris. Why? Because Noach was guiltless. He was a tzaddik. And there was no way that the animals would be able to kill Noach. However, as far as human beings are concerned, the Rishayim of that generation, and there were lots of them in that generation, they were very, very dangerous. They were very misakenet chayav, and therefore he needed a bris. Now I want to show you the pirush of the Alshich to Daniel. Now on your page 4, I mean to say the last of your 4 pages, I printed out a different printout of the Alshich, because this one on your page is very, very small.
Yeah.
So unless you have Superman's supervision, you won't be able to read the Alshich on the page I gave you, probably. But let's take a look in Sefer Daniel. We're looking first in Perek Gimel of Sefer Daniel, and this is a confrontation between Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, and 3 individuals by the name of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And I'm going to read to you. You could follow in the, you know, number 10, which is on page 1 in the Aramaic of Daniel, and I'm going to read it to you in English from the Art Scroll. And he writes the following. He says, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not worship my God? That you do not prostrate yourselves to the golden statue that I have set up? Now behold, you must be prepared. When you hear the sound of the horn, the whistle, the tambourine, the trumpet, and the cymbals, the flute, and all kinds of music, fall and prostrate yourselves to the statue that I have made. But if you do not prostrate yourselves, you will immediately be thrown into a fiery burning furnace. And who is the God that can save you?" And then he goes on to say, this already is beyond the psukim. He says, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah responded to the king, "Nebuchadnezzar, we're not worried about replying to you on this matter. Behold, our God whom we worship is able to save us. He will rescue us from the fiery burning furnace and from your hand, O king. But in case he does not, let it be known to you, O king," in other words, they weren't sure that there would be a miracle, "that we do not worship your God. We do not worship the golden statue that you have set up, and we shall not prostrate ourselves." And then the psukim go on. Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and his face became contorted at this response of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and as a result, he tells the people in charge of the fire to heat up the furnace 7 times more hot than it's normally heated, commanding the strong men of his guard to bind these 3 Jews, throw them into the burning fiery furnace. And they took these 3 Jews and they bound them in their cloaks, with their pants on, their robes on, and their other clothing. They were thrown into the fiery burning furnace. Thereupon, because the king's command, and because the furnace was so overheated, the men who carried up Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were killed by the flame of the fire. And these 3 men fell bound onto the fiery burning furnace. And he exclaimed to his ministers, "Did you throw them into the fire?" They said, "True, O king. Behold, I see these unbound men walking in the fire, no wound upon them. Their clothes are not singed." And then Nebuchadnezzar approaches them and he says that your God saved you, and so forth and so on. It's a beautiful, beautiful parasha. So if you take a look at the Alshich, he says the following. Hidei al pi ha-dover ha-nimtza b'zor ha-kadosh, based on the Zohar in Parshas Vayeshev about Reuven and Yosef, l'chalek, to differentiate bein ha-nofel biyad horeg bal b'chira asher ya'aved monos mimenu, he has no salvation once he's given over to the hands of a bal b'chira, of man. And on the other hand, l'nofel b'yad behemis yar or arud. Arud is a kind of a serpent. Memis, that's very dangerous. So esh, or another natural force like fire, umayim abilti bali bechira. He says, now perhaps we can understand this encounter, this dialogue between the three Jews and Nebuchadnezzar. And he says, Yitochein hayadvar melech lemar gam ki tinatzlu me'aesh. He's saying that, you know what, you guys are saying that you'll survive the fire, but man havilah, so what is that going to benefit for you? Yatzilchem, who's going to save you? Miyad atzmi, from my own hands. Basher ani bal b'chira, ki lo yosir b'chirasi v'meni, kasher echshov, yesh l'limo kem in asefer anizka, meaning from the Zohar. He says the following, that Nebuchadnezzar threatened them, that if somehow you survive the fire, I'll put you to death. But at the end, that didn't happen, because Nebuchadnezzar was not able to deny that miracle that happened. Now we want to fast forward to the next Alshich. Now the king is called Dariush, and this is in Perek Vav of Sefer Daniel. And this you'll see on page 2 of Yomar HaMikvos. Again, hold on to page 4. And there, the Pasuk says, this is about Daniel. Again, he's going to throw Daniel into the big five, to the lion's den. And in Pasuk Yud Ches, in Perek Vav, it says the following. They threw him into the lion's pit. The king exclaimed to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve, continually save you. And a stone was brought, was placed over the opening of the pit. The king sealed it with his own signet ring, and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that his will regarding Daniel could not be changed. Then the king went to his palace, he went to bed, blah blah blah. The king arose, darkness before dawn. He went in haste to the lion's pit. When he drew near the pit to Daniel, he cried out in a sad voice. The king called out and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God whom you serve continually able to save you from the lions? He didn't expect to hear any response. And then Daniel spoke to the king. May the king live forever, but my God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths, and they did not wound me, because merit was found before him, with a capital H. And therefore, O king, I have done no harm. If you take a look at the Alshich, he says, Zem mora b'etzva asher kasavdu l'mala. Again, this is another reflection of what we discussed earlier. Al vikuach chananya v'chaverov im Nebuchadnezzar. Remember the debate and that dialogue between Chananya and Nebuchadnezzar, b'omro, when Nebuchadnezzar says, Umanhu Eloka di Yishzavinchun min yadi. You know, who's going to save you? Where's your God? He'll save you from my hands. Ki yesh lekel yad. A tzaddik could hope and have the ability. Bitzikoso, Leos morov chatisoso al kol chayes ha sode. For yira me'ari noem v'dov shokek. Man could overcome his fear if he has the right tzidkus, the right level of righteousness with regard to lions and vicious bears, you know, grizzly bears. Achadovra koshali notzelhu, but the most difficult thing in saving man is mizroa rasha vera, from the arm of an evildoer. Ki osa Yasev ein machlin, he could do whatever he wants, and he's not embarrassed about it. He's evil, and he embodies evil. Basher hu yisbrach nosan lo bechira, because man is granted with freedom of choice. Ve'rotzon l'chol asher yachpots yata, and he can do whatever he wants. So here's a person who's guiltless. He's a tzaddik. He doesn't have to worry about animals. They won't be able to subdue him, to defeat him, but he's worried about a human being, because a human being is granted freedom of choice. Ubechein Omar Belibo Dariush HaMelech Halom in Arayos, as far as the lions are concerned, Kalhu al Pneihem. Yeah, they think it's very easy, because Tipo Moro Vechitisiso Bal Yigubo Achdog. What about the Sarim and so forth, those evil officers in the king's court? They are like Malochei Roim Hapogimbo and Yad Evenbo. They can throw stones and kill him. And here, Lo Yisashe Selukimlo Latzilim Biyodom. And now man is granted freedom of choice, and God will not be able to, I shouldn't say not be able to, but will not save man and protect him from the hands of man. And as you know, Rav Moshe, on a daily basis, in the Ashkenazic tradition, we have psukim, or at least one pasuk in Sefer Shmuel Beis that we recite before Nefilas Apayim. Keep in mind that Nefilas Apayim represents the ultimate supplication when man feels all is lost and he has to throw himself into the hands of God. So if you'll take a look here, number 14, you'll see the psukim. And I'll read it to you again, even though here it's a little bit easier, it's in Lashon Kodesh, but just to save a little time, I'll read it to you in the English translation. And it says the following. This is Pasuk Yigimel. God, he's the Novi, came to David and told him, "Would you rather have 7 years of famine come to your land, or 3 months of fleeing from your enemy while he pursues you, or 3 days pestilence is called dever, in your land? Now determine, consider, what answer I should return to the one who has sent me," meaning the Novi is saying, what would be your choice? And David turned to God and he said to him, "I'm exceedingly distressed. Let us fall into the hands of Hashem, for His mercies are abundant, but let me not fall into human hands." So the Radak is very bothered by this pasuk. The choices here that God gave them was either famine or pestilence. Right? Let me go over it one more time. Sorry. He says the following. "Would you rather have 7 years of famine come to your land, or 3 months of fleeing from your enemy while he pursues you, or 3 days of dever in your land?" And David HaMelech's answer was, "I want to fall into the hands of God." And that's what we say before Tachta Vayomer David El God, "Tzar li me'od, I'm very upset about all these three choices, none of them are great, but nipla na b'yad Hashem, I'd rather fall into the hands of Hashem." Says the Radak, and you can either follow it if you can see it on your page, or on the back of page 4, he says, "Zehu ha-dever." What David HaMelech chose of those three options, famine, dever, or being run and pursued by the enemies, he chose dever. Why? So here the Radak quotes a pasuk in the Eser Makis, and it says there, "Yad Hashem hoya b'mikniko," and that's dever. And so therefore, the Radak says that you see that dever is called Yad Hashem, and that's when David chose one of the three options, he chose dever. Why? Why is dever called Yad Hashem? What about Ra'av? What about famine? V'od, he says, "Ki b'ra'av afal pishu b'yad Hashem," even though God is behind famine, but nevertheless, as a result of famine, it's inevitable that man is going to fall into the hands of fellow man, right? Because if you're desperate for food, you have to go to some sort of country on the face of the earth where there is no famine. For example, in history, the Jews went to Mitzrayim or other Lishbar Bar, Velechem. Aval adever ein bo el yad Hashem levad. The dever is purely Yad Hashem. Ra'av might lead you to have to beg and borrow and steal from other human beings, and then you're in the hands of those, whether they have mercy on you or not, that's going to be the question. So David's choice, he opted for dever because dever is totally Yad Hashem. And perhaps we can understand this Radak in the light of everything that we discussed about Mechiras Yosef and about the Parsha of Hananya and Sefer Daniel. And that is that David HaMelech would rather be thrown, you know, be under the Yad Hashem, Hashem is full of rachamim, and maybe God would spare him and save him, even from ra'av, even from famine. But that's only if he chooses dever, which is Yad Hashem. Once he chooses ra'av, and he chooses the other option of being nirdaf, shloshes yomim, then... I should say, how many months was it? 12 yatsamim, shlosha chadoshim, lifnei tzarecha, 3 months. That's already, forget it. Man is given freedom of choice, and basically, you're a goner. A similar idea we'll find in the case of Hevel, of Cain killing Hevel. The pasuk says back in Bereishis Perek Dal, "Vayomer me asisa kol dmei achicha tzaakim elai min hadama." So Rashi says, "Tzaakim elai min hadama dmei achicha damo v'dam zar Yosef." Interesting. Cain is found guilty not only for killing Hevel, but even, because here it's in plural, it says Achicha, and you read it Achicha with a Yud, means many of your brothers, meaning even the offspring. So it's amazing. We're talking about a murderer, and he's going to be punished not just for the murder of his victim, but also for the children that could have been born from that victim. So Rav Dessler is famous for saying, "Adayin tzarich in." He asks the question, "B'kam mekom es mashi adam yesh lach rayis al etzem ha'maisa?" Right? It says, "Dini nefashos is im heidu sheker damo v'dam zarosav shalanido tluyim bo ad sofa olam." If a man purges himself, and as a result of his false testimony, someone is guiltless, is put to death, he will be held responsible for all the doros. Shekem atzinu b'kayin, sh'arag es achiv, he killed Hevel, sh'arag d'mei achicha tzakim, domo v'dam zarosa. In other words, all the tzatzuim, all the descendants for all the generations, they're all included in the responsibility, the guilt of the rotzeach. Vehine, in kvar nigzar al nirtzach, sheyomus, according to all the commentaries who disagree with the Alshich and the Orachaim, and they maintain that a guiltless person will not die. If he's killed, he must be guilty. Is therefore kvar nigzar al nirtzach sheyomus al kolponim. Is hare lo yilo tzatzoim al kol panim, means in one way or another he's going to die. Whether somebody murders him or he'll die by falling off a cliff, he's going to die. And therefore he won't have these children. So it was already decreed in Shamayim that this man, this victim of murder, will not have children. How therefore can you hold him responsible for the children that would have been born? He says, v'yefshal lidchok v'lomar, Shekmoshal inyan domov anu omrim shechayev ahore ke ilu hoya nerag poter mi misa kachli inyan zaro, means maybe in the laws of judgment when we judge a criminal, so we don't consider what would have happened if not for his criminal act, but rather we judge him and we punish him for what he in his mind would have achieved. And from his perspective, he was killing someone who was guiltless, and therefore he's responsible and liable even for the generations that would come out. And now we're going to continue with the Mikvah Eliyahu on the top left, but keep in mind, Rabbosai, that according to the Alshich and the Arachayim HaKadosh, this whole kasha, the Mikvah Eliyahu, is not a kasha at all, because according to them, a murderer has the capacity in the context of his freedom of choice to kill someone who's absolutely innocent. And as a result, he's responsible for the death of all the generations that could have come out of that victim. And your kasha, well, you know, it was decreed in heaven that he would die anyway, is not a kasha because he was absolutely guildless. He writes, Ach l'shem bira inyan bi'omek, Yoser, in a deeper level, he says, take a look at the Ramban. The Ramban, Hevi derech shniel avonas inyan, he has an alternative understanding, Vahu shelefa'omim yochal abocher Lahusif al Hagzera, meaning that freedom of choice allows you to go even beyond that which was divinely decreed. As it says in Zechariah, Nikat Safti Mi'at Vehema Azu L'Ra'ah, Lachem Menash Melech Bavel. I hope he mentions Mitzrayim here, because that's the famous Ramban. Okay, for some reason he's skipping over to Bavel. Onesh Kafel Mechupal. Ki adam lo niskavim litova el lera'a. Ki kavanoso hoisa lahagdil memshalto velo lekaim zerosav. In other words, it could be that the Jewish people were, it was already decreed they would go into exile, but his interest, Melech Bavel, was to take over the land and expand his kingdom. So the Ramban says in such a case, he will be punished for that extra mile that he went in imposing a punishment which was not really meant to be in the divine plan. Achlo nenesh rak ala kavanas hara levada el mishum shahosif lamasa gamal gzera. Once he added to the gzera beyond what Hashem had decreed, is then lo samti lem rachamim, and then there will be no compassion. Akam dover zelichorit zorich iud gadol ki eich yochol adam lahosif al gzeras Hashem yisparach. What does Ramban mean that he went beyond the divine decree? The Ramban seems to partially, at least, accept the position of the Archaim and the Alshich that man could do that which God did not have planned, and he could go beyond the divine plan, and that's why he's punished. And if you accept this Ramban, then in the question of the Michtam Elio, you could answer that although it was decreed that he would be killed, this victim would die, but God would have limited that decree in such a way that the person would have a child, and that those tzetzaim, those descendants that were meant to be born from this person, would in fact be born, and therefore, when man took the freedom of choice and abused it and put this person to death prematurely, and that was beyond the decree of God, then he's held responsible for even the generations that will not be born. Because again, had he left things to be as they were according to the divine decree, then somehow these generations would have been born. And at the end of the day, Rav Dessler is not happy with the thesis of the Ramban, because again, the fundamental principle is that we don't have the power to go against the will of God. And if the will of God is that according to the laws of justice, man should suffer just so much and not more, how could man, in this case Melech Bavel, have the freedom of choice to go beyond God's will and impose punishments and bring about death and destruction and suffering beyond God's will? So he's not so happy about that. And here we have a maimer of Rabbi Elchanan Vasser, and that's called the Kovetz Mamorim, which starts here on your page 2, and it is Lule Devrei Moyev Shalom Di Ein Shum Chiluk Bein Atzmo Li Achid Kmo She'ein Biyecholto Larog Adam Acher Elim Kein Nigzar Ploni She'orik Ochinami. He wants to know about suicide. Does a person have freedom of choice to commit suicide? And the Sefer HaChinuch seems to assume that there's a differentiation between your freedom of choice, which is limited with vis-a-vis somebody else, but you have full freedom of choice over yourself, and you could expose yourself to danger and therefore die, even though you weren't meant to die. And Rabbi Elchanan doesn't accept that distinction. He says, "Hachinami ein biyado lahamis es atzmo el kein nigzer olav." The principle of the justice of God and what was decreed by God has to be an absolute principle that should apply equally well to the case when you try to kill someone else and the case, the circumstance when you try to kill yourself. And in all cases, the murderer must be put to death. And even if he kills himself, he really should be put to death, but he's already dead. And he quotes the Ramban, Vida v'havein ki ha'ish shenichta v'nechta m'rosh shana l'ariga lo yinoke ha'listim ha'hargo b'avur sh'asam ha'shegazolov, because who rosha b'avono yomus v'domo miyad rotzech yivakish. If someone is guilty for murder, it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant if that person on Rosh Hashanah was, that victim was declared and written down to die during that year. That doesn't in any way exonerate or relieve the murderer of his punishment, of his guilt. And that applies even in the case of suicide. And therefore, he doesn't understand this distinction between Rotzeach, who kills someone else. Now, Rabos, I see we're running out of time, and I apologize, but there's just so much here to do. There's a tremendous insight here that Nitziv Mivalozhin, which we'll see here on page 3. If you can take this page home, I don't know when we'll get a chance to finish this up. Tonight I want to give a shiur on the philosophy of Hanukkah, because I promised that we'd get in, you know, it's already a week before, I wanted to get into a Hanukkah discussion, so that's at 7:30 tonight, so I'm not going to be able to finish this tonight, but somehow, I don't know, we have another 10 makoros here that I want to go through on this very, very fundamental issue and sticky issue in philosophy, whether or not man has freedom of choice to do something against the decree of the Almighty and even kill someone who's innocent. And that becomes a great fundamental issue in the thinkers of Jewish history. So if you, again, I can only appeal to your curiosity and hope that you're so curious about this to want to see the whole picture that you'll be able to do this on your own. I'm just giving you the Maror Makomos for it. And I want to wish everyone a great day, and tomorrow